Bankless Nation, is the third week of June. It's time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. Man, exciting week this week. We got the Genius Act. It just passed in the Senate. And is the Secretary of Treasury bull posting on crypto, David? He called for $3.7 trillion in stablecoins by the year 2030. That's a pretty decent bull post.
Did he call for a stablecoin summer?
No. We got to get him saying it. That's next.
JP Morgan is also joining in on stablecoin summer with their own stablecoin on the Base network, but it's a little bit different from the rest. So we're going to talk about that. And then Coinbase releases not one, not two, not three, four banger products that we're going to talk about as well. We're going to rank order our favorites. And overall, there's just a lot of chaos in the world. There's a conflict in the Middle East, and BlackRock has a take saying smart money is buying chaos. We'll talk about exactly what that means.
David, I'm glad I got you saying stablecoin summer now too. It was not in our notes. That just popped in your head. The virus has spread. Some people on Bankless Discord actually sent me, it was a Coinbase email. Uh-huh. And you know what the title, you know what the subject of the email was? It was like their big newsletter they sent out to all their customers. You know what it was?
Stablecoin summer.
Stablecoin summer here.
I cannot believe how sticky that has gotten.
It was always going to be sticky. And I think we got prices to back it. You're going to show some circle charts later in the episode, right?
Yeah, we're going to show some stablecoin summer charts. That's
okay.
Right.
All right. Let's see that.
First, we got a message for everyone going to DevConnect down in Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires, probably the greatest crypto city, I think, on the planet. I'm going to go ahead and say that. We are doing the second ever Bankless Summit at DevConnect. If you don't know what Bankless Summit is, it's like TED Talks for Ethereum. Doing it at DevConnect. We're doing it on Tuesday. Uma Roy is our brand new sparkly speaker. She's joining the bench of all the speakers that we got at DevConnect, including Justin Drake, Donkrad, Ansgar, Arjun, a returning speaker, and then Tomash from the Ethereum Foundation. So that's not until November, but let me tell you, you heard it here first. So if you're going to DevConnect, make sure you get your tickets. It's going to be all-day event. Again, no panels, no performative panels, just talks. And then we have a wine bar rented out. Did I tell you about that yet, Ryan? We're renting out a wine bar. We're actually renting out Fede's wine bar. I don't know if you know who Fede is, but
of course
he's got
I
a
know
wine
who
bar.
Fede is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
is
yeah this, he's got a wine bar and we're renting it.
The special wine, Argentinian wine, like, yeah, you know,
naturally. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Naturally.
Malbecs is probably what the word that you're looking for.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, this is worth going to just for that, huh? And
yeah.
The bar is really high on these Bankless Summits because the last one was like an absolute banger. I mean, I watched almost every presentation that came out of that remotely, of course. But there was just fantastic content. So hopefully the speakers are prepped for that level of content, huh?
I have told them that it is their job to take command over their session. And they all understand the assignment. Anyway, secure your tickets before price goes up in the future. Speaking of prices going up.
It didn't.
They didn't. They did not go up. They actually went down. Bitcoin price went down 3.4%. $104,000 is where we are. ETH price went down even more. It is not what I'm going to call a Ryan Sean Adams week.
No,
it's
I don't.
Not one
I
of those
take
weeks.
No credit for this.
Ryan takes
this
no credit. It's down 9%. ETH down 9% to $2,500.
Oh, what the heck? You know, things were looking so rosy. And then you said it about the chaos in the world, Israel and Iran. And that started happening, escalating even more. And then we did a tank, it seemed like, on the back of that.
We did a little tanky.
Is that the reason?
This
started happening Thursday, Friday.
I don't know. I mean, Bitcoin actually started to really appreciate after the conflict. And, you know, it got its regular jitters. We're going to talk about this because BlackRock put out a piece about this. It got its regular jitters whenever uncertainty happens. But then it started to perform really strong. But now we're just like ranging again. We are ranging. You know what has gone uppity uppity up? Let me tell you. Circle price. This chart is the chart of stablecoin summer. Last week, Ryan, we were talking about the circle price. Do you remember what it was roughly last week, roughly 7 days ago?
Yeah, I was thinking around 80, correct?
Yeah, which was just fine. You know, it was down from the $110 peak that it had like 2 days prior, but $80 for Circle is incredible. Have you been watching the price action?
No, I've been seeing tweets about it. I've not looked at charts, but I mean, even the 80, it was up double, you know, like more than almost triple, right? From like, what was the IPO price? 30, something like
31,
this? 31,
yeah.
32?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are we doing now?
We are clocking in at $199.84. And it hit like an intraday high of like $230, which put Circle at something like a $55 billion market cap. The $199 price, that's a $48 billion market cap. But Circle is like almost a Coinbase. Coinbase is currently at $75 billion after having a 15% day the day before recording. So Circle or Coinbase also
50%
had a pretty
up.
15% up. Yeah. 15% up. Yeah. But Circle is just, it is starting to be completely DeLulu price action right now.
This is crazy. This can't continue, right? I'm not going to short it, but it can't continue.
I thought about, like, man, I know it's dumb to short and I'm not a short seller and I should not do that. But man, I want to short it. And that I was thinking those thoughts of like $110.
Just admire. That's all you have to do.
Gotta respect the pump.
You brought some other charts though. What do we got here?
Okay, this chart is the Solana Ethereum ratio. Solana is flat versus Ether on the year. I mean, it's obviously
done...
On the whole year. So, it's June 19th, so 6 months, 19 days. Solana versus ETH is flat. So Solana's shown some weakness just over the last, like, couple months or so. And over Ether, over the last, like, six months, it's been flat. Obviously, the 6 months before that were very bullish for Solana, but Solana has not made any grounds on Ethereum.
This is SOL weakness or ETH strength? Or does the answer to that yes?
Yeah, I think that's up for interpretation of the listener. But there's definitely some SOL weakness, which is not to say that ETH has been strong. ETH did have that like 50% candle day, but so far that's kind of proven to just be a one-off.
And then it's really having a hard time.
Yeah,
it
did not turn that 50% candle day into momentum as of yet. If you look at the next chart, which is SOL BTC, does this chart look familiar to you, Ryan, at all? When you look at the shape of this chart, the SOL Solana Bitcoin chart, SOL BTC ratio.
Oh, it just looks like an asset that is just bleeding out, lately anyway, bleeding out since 2024. Looks like bleeding out to Bitcoin, right? To King Bitcoin, just kneeling. It's just like kneeling. It's crouching down before the king and it's, you know, apologizing, kissing some feet maybe.
So when you look at this chart, like, and let's go open up the next chart, which is the ETH BTC ratio.
No, this is
painful.
And
let's flip back and forth between the Solana Bitcoin ratio and the Ethereum Bitcoin ratio. Do you just notice anything?
Yeah, it's bleed season. They're just bleeding
to
Bitcoin.
They look like the same chart, just Solana is just one and a half years behind Ethereum.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's the same chart.
There's a little bump. There's a little green right here lately in the last, you know, 2 months or so. So maybe not all hope is lost. There's got to be some reversion to the mean here, right?
Overall, like the big common denominator I'm seeing is like Bitcoin strength is just so high. The other chart that's missing here is Bitcoin dominance, which continues to be very, very high.
I mean, altcoin season is nigh though, David. It's got to be because it's around that time and Bitcoin dominance cannot get to 100%.
I don't even know what altcoin season means anymore.
You'll remember once we get the first hints of green, the first green shoots in these charts, you'll remember.
Sure.
I'm still a believer.
All right, let's get into the rest of the market's news. Trump's Truth Social has filed for a dual Bitcoin and Ethereum ETF. This is in addition to their Bitcoin ETF. So now they have another one. The allocation will be 75% Bitcoin, 25% Ethereum, which will rebalance quarterly to maintain that ratio. Ticker B.T, custodiancrypto.com. They already had their Bitcoin S1 filed like 1 or 2 weeks ago. So the SEC has a 45-day window to review this. Can stretch it up to 240 days. If greenlit, it could launch in later in 2025.
Dual ETFs are weird. Like, I can just I can buy 75% Bitcoin ETF and 25% ETH if I want to. I don't need somebody to, like, dual it for me and just, I don't know.
Yeah, at that point, I'd prefer to have something like ARK, which is, like, an actively managed ETF by somebody who I trust.
And speaking of ETFs, David, there's a lot more on the horizon. This might revive the altcoin season in
you, okay? Except as an ETF season in TradFi.
Well, maybe. So this is a chart of the Bloomberg probability of approval for down market assets, non-Bitcoin, non-ETH assets, of when they're going to get their ETF, okay? And the Bloomberg guys are pretty good at
this. They're good at this. This is their job.
So odds of approval in 2025, again, not next month, but this year for Litecoin, above 90%. For Solana, above 90%. For XRP, 85%. For Dogecoin, 80%. Cardano, even 75%.
Wow.
We're just getting ETFs for all the things.
Wow. This is just extremely favorable. Everyone is more likely to pass than not pass.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this is not surprising given we have such a crypto favorable administration and SEC, and we have kind of whatever the opposite of Gensler is, that's who Paul Atkins is as the chair. So we're getting approvals for all of these. And there's also talk that some of these ETFs will include staking. Maybe the Solana ETF will include staking, for instance. Which also begs the question, How about ETH staking ETF? That's coming as well? What's that waiting on?
If one gets the staking ETF, then the other will too.
Okay.
I think they'll probably come at the same time.
Did you notice though, look at the firms that have filed for the S1s for all these other ETFs.
Mm-hmm.
What's missing? Which firm is missing here?
Okay, let's see. I'm Grayscale, Bitwise, Hashdex, Franklin Templeton, CoinShares, VanEck, 21 Shares. These are all, I'm reading off all the potential issuers.
Yeah. Who are you missing?
Who's the big multi-trillion dollar asset manager in the room that doesn't have a down market ETF that they want approved?
Yeah. No, there's no, say it.
BlackRock. There's no BlackRock. Yeah. Which, like, you would wonder, BlackRock, they're not dummies. So why not issue anything below Bitcoin and Ethereum?
I don't know.
As we know, both Bitcoin and Ethereum had massively successful ETFs, like incredible demand compared to any other type of ETF that came before it. And I mean, we've talked to BlackRock people before. They would say that they would issue an ETF if they had consumer demand for it, if their clients actually demanded for it. And so my indication, understanding those statements that they've said, that they don't think that there is demand down market beyond Ether, which is a hypothesis, is an idea that we will be able to test. If all of these things are more likely than not to get approved by the end of 2025, we will be able to see exactly how much demand there is for a Dogecoin ETF or a Solana ETF.
Yeah, I wonder. You really have to wonder how much demand there is going to be for Dogecoin ETF, right? The thing that was like, I just wanted Dogecoin in my 401k.
I wasn't going to buy Dogecoin before now, but now that it's in Robinhood, I can get it.
Yeah, so maybe
It's already in Robinhood.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so like maybe BlackRock has kind of the right idea. Maybe the market's just too small, or and that's the thing that would push this over to 100%. Because if BlackRock was on one of these, you know, then probability is 100% because BlackRock always gets what they want, right? Do you want to talk about the Fed this week, what they're doing with interest rates, David?
I would like for you to inform me about what happened. Yes, please.
It's pretty simple. The answer is nothing. They're not doing anything. So they're keeping the rates the same. Target range 4.25% to 4.5%. This was completely expected. This was in script. And much to Trump's dismay, did you see some of the clips coming out about Donald Trump? It's just like entertaining. Okay, it's just entertainment. I'm going to play you one. Here it is.
Doing well, and as a country, if the Fed would ever lower rates, you know, would buy debt for a lot less. It's a shame. This guy, I have a guy. Do you ever have a guy that's not a smart person and you're dealing with him and you have to deal? He's not a smart guy. He's worried about inflation. I said, that's right. If there's inflation in 6 months or 9 months, you lower the rates. So you raise the rates. You can do whatever you want, Brian, right? So let's say there's rampant inflation, which there's none. You know what? There is a success. I got a call from Congress last night. Sir, there's a problem. I said, what is it? Money is pouring in. We don't know how to account for it. I said, check the tariffs. $88 billion came in from tariffs. No inflation. And it's going to get even more so. I know what I'm doing. So we have a stupid person, frankly, at the Fed. He probably won't cut today. Europe had 10 cuts, and we had none. And I guess he's a political guy. I don't know. He's a political guy who's not a smart person, but he's costing the country a fortune. So what I'm going to do is, you know, he gets out in about 9 months. He gets fortunately terminated.
That was Donald Trump speaking of Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
Just being a total bully. That clip goes on for 3-5 minutes. We only played a bit of it, but the whole time he's just calling Jerome Powell a stupid man. He's like, oh man, you ever have to deal with a stupid man? He just makes stupid decisions. Just, like, if inflation goes up, you just raise rates. If it goes down, you lower rates. It's as simple as that.
It's all ad lib. It's like, this looks like a stand up routine to me. He's got, you know, in the background, these like kind of, I don't know, they're construction workers. They're just like laughing, chuckling along with everything he says. Anyway, the Fed is supposed to be independent, making its own decisions. Yeah. We'll see how long that lasts. Right now, they're holding the line here. Something else that's been happening in the chaos, of course, Israel-Iran conflict. Mm-hmm. You'd expect investors to flee to the safe haven assets, right, David?
Right. Yeah. Conflict in the Middle East with one of the world's largest oil producers, where there's a fight, tug of war over nuclear weapons. That's scary for markets. That's uncertainty for markets.
And what is the safe haven asset of safe haven assets? What sets the risk-free rate for all capital?
My favorite assets in the world, bonds.
Bonds. That's right. Treasuries. Okay. But a curious thing happened when this conflict was breaking out, all right, which is treasuries didn't look like safe haven assets at all. So their yields barely budged after the Israeli attacks on Iran, and that was pretty chaotic for markets. Right. Instead, what happened?
Yields have gone up since then.
Yeah, Exactly. Instead, what happened was gold and silver took a run and they started appreciating. So are investors fleeing to gold rather than treasuries? I mean, seems like it looks like it from the charts. And that was a pretty instant reaction here.
Yeah. Downstream of that, gold has now eclipsed the euro in market cap. So, I mean, I come kind of surprised that it hadn't already. But turns out because of the appreciation of gold and also just net buying of gold by European countries, as well as China and Turkey, you know, non-European countries pushing up the price of gold, gold is now larger than the euro.
Yeah, so gold on central bank balance sheets is about 20% of all central bank reserves, right? And so I guess the dollar is still at 46%, so treasuries is 46%, but euros is only 16%. You know, BlackRock is trying to do this thing. We had them on last summer, and they keep saying that Bitcoin is not a risk-on asset, it's a risk-off asset. Okay. And they're continually trying to reinforce this. And they put together this chart, David. What do you see in this chart? This is a chart of major catalysts. It's a table, really, of major catalysts, catastrophic events, things that are destabilizing. You've got in 2020, US-Iran escalation. You've got COVID outbreak. You've got the election challenges of 2020. You've got the Russia invasion of Ukraine. And what they're charting here is 10-day return for S&P 500, for gold, and for Bitcoin. And you look at the 10-day return, and you look at the 60-day return. You see all the green here, David? So Bitcoin is green. It's green on the 10-day for a number of these events, three out of the I guess, six here. And on the 60-day return, it's green in all of the events,
almost
basically.
Almost all of them, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what they're making the case is, hey, 60 days from a destabilizing event, something like Israel and Iran conflict, what tends to happen is first Bitcoin, maybe it goes down, but 60 days later, it's back up. Mm-hmm. So they're saying it's actually a risk-off asset. It's not a risk-on asset.
Yeah. And they've been saying this for over a year now. And I think with the Israel-Iran conflict, you actually really just... It's one thing to make a prediction, you know, looking at data retroactively, but then something after that prediction happens that would test that hypothesis... And Bitcoin performed right in line with that hypothesis. So it's growing in confidence that that's exactly what Bitcoin does. It gets the jitters just like all other assets. But then after that, it just comes out stronger.
So what that means is if this follows the trend 60 days from now, we're going to be well into the green.
Granted, if you zoom, the longer you zoom out, the more likely Bitcoin's going to be green. So at some point, it's also measuring that at the same time. All right. So in addition to stablecoin summer, it's also SPAC summer. So Justin Sun's Tron Group is trying to go public in the United States with a special like acquisition vehicle for TRX. The Wall Street Journal, or maybe it was the Financial Times, they reported it as Justin Sun's like Tron trying to go public. That's not what's happening. It's basically a MicroStrategy for TRX. And this happens just a number of months after U.S. regulators paused a fraud probe into Justin Sun and his companies under his control, which is after Justin Sun makes a major investment into World Liberty Financial and the Trump meme coin and does a video blog of Justin Sun's attendance of the meme coin dinner. I don't know if you saw that blog. So there's a little bit of like, what's going on over here? Because not only that, but Justin Sun is going to be an advisor to Tron Inc., the company, of course, that makes sense. But so will Eric Trump. The Trump family will reportedly have a position on the board of this like special acquisition vehicle for Tron.
The special acquisition vehicle is like a MicroStrategy for Tron, right? And so Justin Sun is depositing, it's like 1% of all TRX supply into the balance sheet to just start a treasury company. And then there was some question as to how involved Eric Trump was. Mm-hmm. I think it first came out that he was like actually active in the project, like one of the, you know, leadership team. And then Eric Trump said that he's not. He denied he's having that like a role in the new firm.
Look at that.
He said, "I'm the biggest fan of Tron and love Justin Sun. He's a great friend and an icon in the space. That said, the below is inaccurate. I don't have public involvement in this company."
There's been like three things that have come out of the Trump orbit where like the Trump sons are like, I do have involvement in this one. I don't have involvement with that one. And they just have to make clarifying statements all the time.
Yeah, I know. It's every week. It's honestly, it's been every week since I've gotten back here. This is a tweet commenting on this effect. Am I getting this right? Number one, Tron investigated by the SEC for market manipulation. Number two, Justin Sun becomes top holder of Trump and World Liberty Financial. Number three, investigation is dropped. Number four, Trump goes public via reverse merger with Eric Trump taking a role at the company. Crime season is here.
Crime season.
Crime, What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, this is what it cost to get Trump into presidency. We have the Genius Act. We have Ross Ulbricht going free. There are some really nice things about the Trump presidency. And then we have this.
This is Molly White, who's obviously a permacritic of everything going on in crypto. She's taking log of all of these things. So
I thought this tweet was so weak.
Tell me about it.
I'm usually like able to give Molly the benefit of the doubt on most things. Like I accept her points at times. Like I she's a valuable critic. This one I thought was uncharacteristically weak of her. She tweeted out.
Describe what it is.
Quid pro quo between cryptocurrency firms, the Trump administration, and the Trump family's crypto ventures. And so she tweets out a picture of a chart and she lists the company, the benefits that they are getting because of Trump being in office, and then the contributions that they made. So like Cumberland, DRW, Ripple, Coinbase, A16Z, Gemini, Kraken, Circle, Robinhood, Consensus, Binance, Crypto.com are all listed. And they all, she like labeled out all the benefits that they get. Like Circle, the SEC approved the Circle IPO. The Circle's also getting favorable stablecoin regulation with the Genius Act. You know, Cumberland, DRW, SEC enforcement case was dismissed with prejudice. Ripple, SEC enforcement case pending revolution, right? And so all of the benefits that crypto companies have gotten now that Trump is in office. And then there is also Justin Sun, SEC enforcement case stayed, criminal investigation possibly paused. Like, I just thought, like, she's just using the Biden choke point 2.0 oppression of the industry as this benchmark of what ought to have been. And then now that anything different has happened that's positive towards crypto, she is alluding to being a quid pro quo of the crypto industry to the Trump administration. Which is just like totally unfair. It's like the benchmark that she's using is completely unconstitutional.
Yeah, I mean, I guess some of this is, would you say some of this is fair, but most of it's not?
The Justin Sun part, which is, it's convenient that she listed him first and then all the other, like Coinbase? Like, how is Circle going public quid pro quo to the Trump administration?
Yeah, and also you look at kind of the SEC enforcement against Coinbase and you know, on down Kraken and Robinhood. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was unjustified in the first place, right? I mean, it's like that should never have happened. And the SEC and as well as the FDIC was completely weaponized against crypto. And so what choice did some of these crypto companies have? What I hate about this is you're forced to pick a camp, right? Yeah. And it's like, that's why I feel like everything forces us into, you're either pro crypto or you're against you like crypto. Either crypto is kind of bribing its way into relevance, or it's, you know, surviving for its life against a brutal government, right?
This is a problem with government.
There's no nuance.
If you don't pay the government like tax, then you get stamped out as an industry. Crypto is not the first or the second or the third industry to learn this. Every industry just learns that you have to bribe government to make your industry illegal. And so it's not fair for her to single out the crypto industry. This is just the way that things are. You know, Elizabeth Warren came in with a hammer against the big banks, and now the big banks are her biggest donors. I don't see the Molly White tweet about that relationship between big banks and Elizabeth Warren. Like, go tweet about that. You're just criticizing the notion of money in politics, which I'm also a critic of. But you don't get to say that this is a uniquely crypto thing that we are doing. We are just playing the game shoulder to shoulder with all other industries.
Yeah, I will say the Justin Sun thing, that's pretty unique.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that Justin Sun is really fucking all this up for us.
But what do you think of the overall soul of crypto right now, as you kind of like look back? So this is Zach XBT, right? And he is the sheriff of crypto, good guy, white hat, has helped so many in the space. He put out a tweet, he basically said this: the crime supercycle is indeed very real. He's talking about crypto. While it's true the industry has historically been ripe for abuse, it has noticeably increased since politicians launched meme coins and numerous court cases were dropped, further enabling behavior. He goes on, he talks about the laundering, money laundering that's going on with OTC brokers. He talks about KOLs facing zero repercussions, basically scamming their communities, courts siding with smart contract exploiters, so basically like criminals. Can we fix the system if the vast majority of people still do not care unless they lose money? There's kind of a feeling of, you know, like some OGs in crypto that we're losing something, that this, you know, crime season is kind of rotting out the soul. What's your feeling of it?
Yeah, it does kind of feel like the Overton window of on-chain crypto markets has drifted farther to crime than like any of the OGs really hoped that it would. And then you have like serious companies, Robinhood, Coinbase, Circle, going public on the public stock market. And like, we're like, oh, we're left with like leftovers. And we don't really get any cool, valuable tokens. We only, all the tokens that are like interesting investments are all problem childs. We'll talk about that with the BlockWorks Transparency Report initiative that comes later in the show, because there's the whole idea that, like, as crime permeates and becomes normalized, then the whole sector becomes uninvestable. And so tokens are, like, becoming uninvestable, which is problematic because we want tokens to become the new way to issue equity. But if you're just issuing your equity shoulder to shoulder with crime, then, like, maybe it's better off to be in the public markets. Like, I think that's a pretty logical train of thought.
I mean, have we swung too far on the other side of this, right? It's like now everything's permitted. And so, you know, criminals are coming in. Previously, a year or two ago, it was Operation Choke Point. Nothing was permitted. They're trying to choke at the industry. Yeah. But now this is Taylor Monahan. She's saying crypto right now is in a rough spot. It's attracting and retaining more anti-social, selfish, corrupt people while excluding, demoralizing, and wrecking those who are good faith, cooperative, selfless. Is there an element of that?
Yeah.
I think
people have a hard time, like, parsing the good guys from the bad guys in crypto.
My take is, you know, the Balaji corkscrew of progress, right? Where sometimes you kind of go too far on one side and then you go too far on the other, but you're always corkscrewing up into some progress here. I feel like that's what crypto kind of is. We went Operation Choke Point. Now we're probably going a little too far in the crime season. We'll balance back out.
Yeah, hopefully sooner rather than later. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about the genius stablecoin bill that the Senate just voted yes on. It is almost done, but we got some hurdles left over. We're going to talk about that. And then JP Morgan, whose CEO called Bitcoin a pet rock and said if he were the government, he would shut it down, is now launching a tokenized deposit token on Base. Interesting. We're going to talk about all of that and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible, like Uniswap. It's a mobile wallet. It's the best place to do DeFi. Let's go and hear from Uniswap right now. Uniswap is your gateway to a more efficient DeFi experience. With Uniswap, swapping and bridging across 13 chains is simple, fast, and cost-effective, helping you move value wherever, whenever. Thanks to deep liquidity on the Uniswap protocol, you'll enjoy minimal price impact on every trade. And now Uniswap V4 takes it even further. Swappers benefit from gas savings on multi-hop swaps and ETH trading pairs, while liquidity providers can create new pools at 99% lower costs. The best part, you don't have to do anything extra. Each trade is automatically routed through Uniswap X, V2, V3, and V4, so you get the most efficient swap without even thinking about it. Whether you're swapping, sending, on-ramping, off-ramping, or bridging, Uniswap's web app and wallet gives you the tools to unlock DeFi's full potential on Ethereum, Base, Arbitrum, Unichain, and more. Use Uniswap's web app and wallet for a more efficient way to use DeFi. Imagine if your checking account and DeFi wallet finally spoke the same language. That's Mantle Banking, an all-in-one fiat and crypto account. It lets you save, spend, and invest all from one dashboard. Swipe for coffee, stake ME3 yield, or even use virtual cards for payments through Apple Pay. So it feels Web2 simple, yet stays Web3 sovereign. For allocators, meet Mantle Index 4, the S&P 500 of crypto, a tokenized institutional-grade fund seeded with $400 million from the Mantle Treasury and balanced across Bitcoin, Ether, Sol, and yield-enhanced stables. One asset, broad exposure, pure DeFi composability. The momentum is real. ME faults, FBT BTC bridges, and a $2.4 billion community treasury are all powering the next phase of on-chain finance. Mantle brings real-world access, yield, and utility to digital assets. Ready for the next era of on-chain finance that actually belongs in 2025? Explore Mantle at mantle.xyz or follow mantle_official. Mantle, bridging TradFi and DeFi so you don't have to. Celo, the blockchain engineered for everyday payments, has officially returned home to Ethereum as a blazing fast layer 2. Built on the OP stack and EigenDA, Celo delivers 1-second blocks, subcent fees, and fee abstraction so users can pay gas in USDT, USDC, or any whitelisted ERC20 token. Add native bridging, Ethereum-level security, and ultra-green money, and you have a network purpose-built for global commerce. In just 5 years, Celo has processed 730 million transactions for 12 million addresses. It's launching with 100 partners and fresh DeFi firepower. That makes Celo the on-chain FX hub for borderless remittances and real-world spend. For builders, distribution is baked in. Programs like Presenti Grants, Retroactive Public Goods Funding, Celo Camp, and Proof of Ship will put your mini app on Farcaster and Opera MiniPay. Tokenomics leveled up too. The great Celo halving cuts inflation from 2% to 1%, aligning the chain with its ambitious Vision 2030, a $1 trillion on-chain economy where regens, cypherpunks, and degens create prosperity for all. Follow at Celo on X and start building at celo.org today. The Genius Act has passed in the Senate. The vote was 68 to 30, like overwhelming bipartisan support. Happened roughly 6 weeks after Senator Bill Hagerty, who we just had on the podcast, go listen to that episode, introduced the legislation in the first place. We also got some Trump commentary. The Senate just passed an incredible bill that is going to make America the, all caps, undisputed leader in digital assets. Nobody will do it better. It is pure, all caps, genius. Digital assets are the future, and our nation is going to own it. The House will hopefully move lightning fast, pass a clean Genius Act, get it to my desk ASAP. No delays, no add-ons. Trump wants that bill on his desk. He doesn't want the House to add anything, because if the House adds anything, then it has to go back to the Senate. So Trump's saying, House, don't do anything other than vote yes so I can sign this bill into law, which bullish, very bullish.
Well, speaking of bullish, this is Secretary Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary of the U.S. He said recent reporting projects that stablecoins could grow into a $3.7 trillion market by the end of this decade.
Yeah, it's increasing its price targets. That's kind of some bull market top signal activity right there.
It's fantastic coming from a Treasury Secretary. Uh-huh. He said a thriving stablecoin ecosystem will drive a demand from the private sector for treasuries, which back stablecoins. This demand could lower government borrowing costs and help rein in the national debt. He gets it. He's looking at stablecoin holders and he's saying, oh, these are customers. These are people who will buy my bonds when maybe countries won't. He's getting the full picture. This is everything we've been saying. And to have the Treasury Secretary behind it is something else. There's also an interview. I think this is really going to change the conversation. If there's anyone left in government who is saying, hey, crypto is bad for the U.S., maybe it's bad for the U.S. dollar, this is the Treasury Secretary in response to a reporter who used that line.
Because crypto, that seems to be a threat to the dollar, doesn't it?
I think it's the opposite.
Oh, really?
I think stable coins could reinforce dollar supremacy. Because with stable coins could end up being one of the largest buyers of U.S. treasuries or T-bills.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, if you are using a stable coin in Nigeria that's backed by the U.S. dollar, you don't actually have to have dollars. It's on your phone. You can transact. So I think there's a very good chance that crypto is actually one of the things that locks in dollar supremacy.
Isn't that crazy?
He was like, so ready for that question.
Yeah.
He was like,
smiling.
I'm so glad you asked.
He's smiling the whole way through. What's interesting about this, you know, the big concern from all the way back, the genesis of crypto is that it would be choked off by the world governments, and particularly the U.S. Okay. So if Bitcoin crypto is starting to threaten the U.S. dollar, what's the U.S. going to do? It's just going to choke it off. This to me is signal that we have completely neutralized that threat. And this is surprising to a lot of probably people who, back in 2015, if you told them, look, the U.S. is actually going to use crypto rails to export dollar supremacy and they're going to love crypto, that would have been surprising to them. So I feel like we've completely, at least in this cycle, neutralized the attack from the U.S. government on crypto. And that's a big win as well.
Okay, question, hypothetical question. Democrats get elected next election cycle. Blue House, blue Congress, blue Senate, blue President. How far back does the pendulum swing, or is crypto like well embedded and Democrats learn their lesson and they're like, you know what? We're just not touching it. We're just going to let it go.
I think there's going to be a backlash. I think there is going to be a Thor hammer smacked on the head of...
Oh, a bad backlash.
Yes, in certain sectors of crypto, but not all of it. In the next 2 to 4 years, it's going to become so embedded that you won't be able to kind of completely
strip it out.
But there will be some sort of backlash, right? It's like, in the Genius Bill, Democrats called it the Trump loophole. Mm-hmm. All of Congress was not able to issue a stablecoin or make profits based on the issuing of a stablecoin. No member of Congress could do that. But you know who could? The president of the United States. All right.
Well, if that's where the backlash goes, that's totally fine. There's things that Circle going public, and I hope many more crypto companies going public.
Yeah, it's entrenched.
Is something that does cement stablecoin position.
Yeah.
And so at least with stablecoins, I don't think there's going to be much blowback.
I agree.
Maybe other parts of the market. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe other parts of the market. There are still some threats here. Will this bill pass? That's the question. Polymarket's giving it an 82% chance right now, which is pretty good. I mean, there is some question, though. What does this mean for some established stablecoins? Obviously, this is very bullish for Circle. How about Tether, though? Because Tether is kind of the stepchild of stablecoins, right? It's like offshore. It's got this reputation of maybe like being used criminals and is, a bit maybe nefarious. It's certainly not a domestic asset. So what happens to Tether in this bill?
I would say just kind of reading his body language and some of his answers when we asked him about the Genius Act, Paulo is indifferent. I think Tether is...
That was your take?
I think Tether is so large that Paulo is like, I don't care. I'm the 18th largest treasury owner. I am sitting shoulder to shoulder with countries.
Like I already won?
I'm the fifth largest treasury purchaser in the last 12 months. I don't care. Like, how the Genius Act is interesting to me. I'm going to issue my domestic United States flavor of Tether just to be in that market. But like, I'm so large that I'm bigger than the Genius Act. That was my takeaway from Paulo.
He's just completely unaffected. I can totally see that interpretation. I mean, like mechanically in the Genius Act, what it means is that if USDC does nothing right now, okay, mm-hmm. within 3 years, it will be completely banned from the US. So no crypto exchange can list it. All right. No bank can kind of service it. It's out of here. It's out of here. Now, there is an opportunity for Tether to acquire an OCC license. And Paulo told us, yeah, we're planning to do that. Mm-hmm. And he also told us they're planning to do a domestic onshore US-based stablecoin too.
Right.
So they still want to have do both and pursue both at the same time. And it seems to me he thinks that the big use for stablecoins is actually not in the US banking. It's not domestic at all. It's not in the US banking system.
It's foreign.
Yeah, it's foreign. It's for everybody that doesn't currently have access to a US bank, right? And so he thinks that Tether is best positioned to capitalize on that market, whether it gets through the OCC license under the Genius Act or not.
It does kind of bifurcate Circle from Tether in the sense that Circle is for domestic payments and Tether is for foreign like crypto dollars, like a euro dollar. It is the new euro dollar market. And that's not necessarily for payments, it's for reserves. It's like a savings vehicle. It's for bank deposits in foreign banks. It's for individual deposits in the Tether bank account on whatever blockchain they use. And so very different outcomes, I think, even though the end up product is kind of the same.
It does strike me, though, that there are some losers on the back of this bill, again, assuming it gets approved. And that's got to be the Visas and MasterCards. That's got to be the incumbent payment system that charges 3% on every single consumer transaction in the U.S. That's a tax. I don't know. Like, I live in Virginia. The state tax is like 5%. Okay. The MasterCard and Visa tax is 3%. It's almost as high as my state, you know, consumption tax,
right?
Which is absolutely crazy. And it feels like if stablecoins really take off in the way that we think they can, that rent seeking is going to be eroded.
Yeah, which is a fundamental promise that the crypto industry started writing in like 2010, 2011. So it's good to finally see that actually kind of show up in reality. Like Visa, MasterCard stock prices reacting to this is finally indicative of this is actually here. And there's also other news in this roll-up that we'll talk about with Shopify and USDC and Base, which is, going right after these payment networks.
Sidestepping the credit cards, right?
Base is the new Visa. Shopify is the new endpoint.
You promised to tell us about the JPM coin. So what's this, a stable coin from JP Morgan?
Yeah, not a stable coin, a tokenized bank deposit. What's the difference? I'm not too sure, but this one is also permissioned. It's like an intra network for JP Morgan, and it's supposed to just be for JP Morgan and his permissioned clients. How a JPMD token is different from a stable coin at the end of the day, I think we aren't totally sure, but first of its kind on a public blockchain, it'll be issued on Base. And for, 24/7, 365 settlements between JP Morgan accounts. Like, why permissioned? Unsure. I guess is they're just using Base as like back end bank account infrastructure for themselves, but using a public blockchain. It doesn't really impact me. I don't really know. What's your take?
It's interesting, right? So there's the word that JP Morgan has filed a trademark for something called JPMD, okay, which appears to be a stable coin, right? So that happened. And then also their Coinbase has announced that JP Morgan put the tokenized deposits, as you said, on chain, on Base, as using that as a settlement layer. And that's called JPMD. It's the same JPMD, right? But this is, as you like, it's not like a stable coin because you can't move it from one address to another. It's just for institutions. And so it's on chain, but it's unclear like why it's on chain or what you can do with it. It's on chain. And I'm really not sure why JP Morgan is pursuing this rather than the Genius Bill Act stablecoin strategy, which feels like, okay,
you
why doesn't
you just got the green light to do an actual stablecoin. Just make an actual stablecoin. You are a bank. Go do a stablecoin.
Go do it. You can now do it, basically. So maybe this is a stepping stone to that. It probably is. That's probably the future. And it's pretty significant because the guy who said, like, if I was the US government, I'd kill Bitcoin. I'd ban Bitcoin.
Right.
Now his bank is issuing a stablecoin on a public blockchain. So more from them, I'm sure.
I'll read a quote from Alex Loren's newsletter, which goes out today. It's very possible that this is innovation theater with an announcement timed to benefit from the glowing coverage of stablecoins and not much more than that. Oof.
Maybe so.
Deadly. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk about all the big Coinbase announcements that came out of their Coinbase State of Crypto event that they held last week. And then also, Kraken launches a token for their Layer 2. And we're going to talk about all this and more. But first, a message from some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and Rollups. So the core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points. And explore Fractal's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol, it's a digital nation, powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use Frax.com/r/Bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards. Binance is the world's number one crypto exchange. Over 275 million users already trust their world-class security. Binance makes starting crypto as simple as it should be, whether it's learning about crypto on Binance Academy or browsing hundreds of assets and viewing your newly created portfolio in a clear, easy-to-track dashboard. Binance helps you go at your own pace. For hardcore traders, Binance Pro opens up industry-leading services for trading professionals with fully bespoke trading products, along with a suite of white-glove services for VIP and institutional clients. Need support? 24/7 customer service is on hand whenever you need it. And with some of the lowest fees and deepest liquidity in the market, it's no surprise why over 275 million users trust Binance for everything crypto. Download Binance today and get started in minutes. Binance is not available in certain countries, including the United States. Check its terms for more information. The Ink Foundation, which is the foundation that supports the Ink Layer 2 blockchain, which is the blockchain supported by Kraken, the exchange, will launch its native token, Ink, to bootstrap the marketplace through a liquidity-first strategy. They tweeted out, "Most tokens launch with a vibe and a prayer. Ink is launching with utility, a single token model designed for usage, not speculation, no fluff, no governance theater, just aligned incentives from day one." So what's the token going to do? Primarily for usage in DeFi. It sounds like it's going to be incentives for TVL in DeFi. They are getting a version of Aave. Aave is deploying onto the Ink network. And so they are going to mint a fixed supply of 1 billion Ink tokens. And there will be an airdrop to early users of the Ink network. So if you've already been on Ink, congratulations, you're probably getting an airdrop. What was your big takeaway? What was your response? What was your thoughts about Ink?
It seems like it's a liquidity mining token, which we've seen before. It's unclear what the utility actually is. Zooming out though, so Coinbase has its Layer 2 base, which is absolutely massive. Mm-hmm. Almost 4 billion in total value locked at this point. So Kraken has been out for 7 months now. Mm-hmm. All right. And their TVL is only 7 million. So it's like a massive delta there. So it feels like Kraken is struggling maybe with adoption of Ink, and I'm not sure that the Ink token is going to spur that adoption very much. I mean,
do you think this is coming from a place of strength or a strength of weakness? It sounds like it's coming from a place of weakness.
It's definitely coming from a place of weakness at this point. Maybe it'll help. I mean, token incentives have kind of helped the Unichain bootstrap some liquidity. You definitely need that, but this has to be part of a broader strategy that Kraken needs to deploy to increase the total value locked and the usage of its chain.
Another announcement this week comes out of EigenLayer. They launched EigenCloud. What is EigenCloud? It is basically EigenLayers as a product, is the packaging up in this very accessible package to developers. And so it's kind of like AWS, but with all of EigenLayer's services built right into it. And so there's all these different AVSs that build little modules on EigenLayer. There's a couple of these components. Everything in EigenCloud is just all of that wrapped up so that developers can go access what EigenLayer sells, which is basically cryptonomic security, trust, slashable trust. And so that got launched this week. That also came with an announcement of a $70 million token purchase from A16Z.
I listened to your podcast with Sriram. The whole concept was like, it's a verifiable compute, right?
Yep.
It's like AWS for verifiable compute. I still found it hard to wrap my head around.
It's hard to imagine.
Verifiable. Yeah.
It's hard to imagine. Yeah.
I understand why verifiable compute is important for blockchains, mm-hmm. because it's all about property rights and assets. And you need to know that the supply is what it says it is. And I need to know your address has received my funds. And I need to know how much, like, it's that verifiable compute in the asset property registry mm-hmm. space. Like, I understand that now. I can't really imagine use cases beyond that. And maybe that's a limitation that I have in my thinking.
Yeah, I think if you are like a eigenlayer bear or a bull, it really rests on like how easy it is to imagine that future. And from the bullish side, it's like, well, yeah, it's because this is a net new thing. There's no comparable to really illustrate what eigenlayer, eigencloud is trying to do. But there are some things that you can kind of like understand. Like say, for example, we wanted to govern over something like a company, a very large company using an AI LLM. And we needed to have some assurance that the computation of that LLM is done by the right code and there isn't like a man in the middle attack or any other sort of just like spoofing to verify that computation. And so, yeah, I think whether you're an eigenlayer bear or a bull kind of rests on like how easy is it to produce the future that eigenlayer wants to produce. And, you know, the bullish side of things will say, well, this is eigenlayer is a net new thing. There is no comparable. And that's why it's hard to imagine. And, you know, Sriram gave a few examples and I could probably list off a bunch of examples and it would still kind of just like kind of feel the blind men feel the elephant. But now the thing is like now this access to what eigenlayer is selling is as easy as a developer going to AWS and getting like an S1 bucket or something like that. And so whereas eigenlayer and the smart contracts and like eigencompute and all that kind of thing that are like kind of these components inside of a car. Well, now we have like the actual product, the actual car. And so you don't have to actually understand how a carburetor works to drive the car. And we just now have the fully seamed, stitched together package.
And maybe the eigentoken will join what Blockworks has just put out, which is the Blockworks token transparency framework. So mm-hmm. this is a 40-point grading rubric basically on token. It's like token mm-hmm. supply, various stats, who holds what, and it's self-reported. This is almost not, I shouldn't say what the SEC should be doing in crypto, but there's an element of it. It's kind of ground up opt-in regulation.
Layer 2 beat for token disclosures, token transparency.
That's a great take. That's exactly what it is. And I'm very hopeful that our tokens adopt this mm-hmm. type of a standard. And it's great that Blockworks is propagating this and putting it out there.
Yeah. So there's 18 different criteria with 3 points that you can score per criteria. So there's like supply schedules, market maker agreements. Like if you've signed a deal with a market maker and that deal is made public, then you get a point. Exchange listing agreements. These are all trying to make these things public so that the average investor can go look at what the actual details of the market maker are. And there's also things like, well, is there equity token misalignment like Uniswap Labs, or is it more like Morpho where there is no equity, there's just a token, things like this. And this was all downstream of some effort from Felipe, who we've had on as a guest, and his notion of like lemon markets. This is what I brought up earlier, where like, well, if we have a bunch of markets, if a bunch of tokens, for example, say 50% of the tokens that are potentially investable are kind of shitty because of bad disclosures, bad market maker agreements, well, it really taints the remaining 50 that are potentially good. And so we are trying to just illuminate, give people who have put their best foot forward with their token a way to advertise the fact that they have put their best foot forward.
And transparency.
There's a transparency. Yeah, there's a page on Blockworks where you can go look at the tokens that have gone through this report. I think there's like 6 of them right now. Morpho is one of them. Stride is one of them. And so the call to action here is if you have issued a token and you would like to flex your transparency and your good intentions, the Blockworks transparency report is a place to do that. And then also, in theory, like you could imagine if there was like 100 tokens that have gone through this process, you could imagine like a Blockworks version of CoinGecko that only lists tokens that have gone through the transparency report. And so it's kind of like a trusted place to get token information.
Yeah. And I think that the good tokens will go do this, right?
Yeah.
Because what do they have to lose?
Yeah.
We're not afraid of transparency. And so you get a market that will form on that too. Mm-hmm. David, there were some major Coinbase product announcements here recently. Can you rattle a few of them off?
Yeah. The Coinbase One credit card, a metal American Express card launching in the fall of this year. 4% Bitcoin cash back, 4% if you have enough assets on your Coinbase account. And then some boosted USDC yields as well. So credit card, perpetual futures, CFTC compliant perps for United States traders.
That's a first, right?
Yes. Perps, onshore perps is a first. It's a very big deal. So they are going after, of course, what is Hyperliquid's non-KYC volume. in-app access to DEXs. So Base DEXs are going to be baked into the main application. That's pretty cool. Coinbase Business, a small, medium enterprise suite for global pay, custodian and trading services, API automation, USDC rewards, and then Shopify tie-in. So merchants can accept USDC on Base with 1% cash back straight into Shopify.
Yeah, that was a big deal, that Shopify thing, right? Shopify is a $142 billion volume company, and they've got 5.5 million merchants. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Coinbase rolled out, too, was this concept with Shopify of commerce payments protocol. So one of the problems with crypto, I guess when you compare it to a network like Visa, is that the payments are immutable, okay? And this is great for a lot of things, but for every day, like you're buying a coffee, you just want a refund, I don't know, there's some fraud, you want to cancel something. Credit cards are way better than just an immutable blockchain. So Coinbase has provided a service in Coinbase Commerce that's deployed on Base to just use a smart contract as escrow. So think of it as like there's a step in between. If I send a merchant some funds, I'm paying with stable coins on Base, then the money actually goes in a smart contract escrow. It's like money in the lockbox, holds the cash. So I'm not actually sending it. I'm just signing approval of it, right? Mm-hmm. And then once the merchant ships their product, maybe does some fraud detection or something to that effect, then the funds are released by the escrow. And in the meanwhile, both sides can kind of cancel the transaction. And if the transaction is canceled, nothing leaves my wallet in the first place. So it's basically giving you some of the same capability that credit card networks have had.
Right.
Which is like
right.
their big feature is like, we're not immutable. You can, you know, we got fraud detection. We can refund if there's like something that needs to be refunded. We can cancel. And now you can do that on crypto too. So you really see Coinbase leveling up payments and that meshing well with stablecoins and doing that in a programmable way completely on chain.
There was one announcement that was not in the Coinbase State of Crypto Summit, but was more kind of behind the scenes. This was reported on Reuters. Coinbase seeks SEC approval for on-chain stocks. So they want to create, if it's on-chain, I'm assuming it's a token, they want to tokenize stocks or support tokenized stocks. Maybe they don't want to do the tokenization themselves, but they want those things. And they're asking the SEC for either a no-action letter or a regulatory exemption so that they can do tokenized stocks, you would presume, on Base. And so just reading between the lines, we have a Coinbase One credit card, perpetual futures, an in-app DEX, Shopify tie-in, and then also approval for on-chain stocks. Coinbase is going for a financial super app. And then you know who else is
all
also
on-chain.
Going for... All on-chain, yeah. You know who else is going for a financial super app? Robinhood, which has many of these things. They have stocks. They have the credit card. They're going for banking services. The Robinhood banking announcement.
Yeah.
I think banking comes in like Q3 or Q4. And then Robinhood, I don't know if they're doing this on purpose, but Coinbase had their State of Crypto Summit. And then Robinhood has their big crypto day at ECC in a couple of weeks, which they've been hyping up in a very big way. And so, yeah, like I'm seeing these two financial
clash of the titans.
I mean, titans in the grand scheme of things, like they're both ish $70 billion right now. So like small in the grand scheme of things, but.
Oh, it's similar market cap.
Similar market caps. Yeah. 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 Well, okay. Coinbase had a 15% day last trading day. It's Juneteenth. So the markets are closed today. So like Coinbase took a little bit of a lead, but I think the coin versus hood story is going to be a huge story because imagine if you are a Zoomer, even a millennial, you're coming of age, you're you know, finally getting some wealth. What are you going to use?
Yeah,
you're
it's one of those two.
TD Ameritrade? You're going to use Fidelity?
No.
Charles Schwab?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You're going to use Coinbase or Robinhood? You're going to do one of those two things.
Yeah, and Coinbase doesn't have stocks, but they want stocks. Mm-hmm. Robinhood has just started in the crypto. They want to be more on-chain, so they're kind of converging, aren't they?
Yeah.
I do wonder at ETHCC, do you think Robinhood is going to roll out like a layer two?
I think that would be the easy guess.
Yeah.
I think that'd be the easy guess.
Maybe it's a stablecoin, David. Get some of that Circle stablecoin premium. We talk about that too.
Yeah.
You know, that if it wasn't all good news for Coinbase, let's say, or good press, there was also this thing, a little thing of the U.S. Army parade. Did you see this? This went mainstream. So, of course, there was on Flag Day, I believe. This was Saturday. I was not watching the parade. It was a big parade. It was also Trump's birthday, was it not? In Washington, D.C., it was a military parade. I've never seen one of these in the U.S.
Never
in the Capitol
seen a United
before,
States military parade before, no.
Yeah, first time for everything, I guess. So we saw a military parade What was surprising to me in looking at this was it was sponsored by, in part by, Coinbase. Now, Coinbase was not the only sponsor, but you saw a lot of images like this, like two big tanks, a whole US Army kind of platform and Coinbase branding. And so the crypto world kind of reacted to this. I saw some good reactions to it, some positive reactions. We'll get to that. Some Coinbase employees with positive reactions.
Coinbase employees thought this was sick.
Yeah, a lot of negative reactions. What was kind of the negative reactions that you saw?
I mean, generally that this is completely antithetical to what crypto is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Which I very much resonate with. Like the cool thing about Bitcoin proof of work and Ethereum proof of stake is that we can create a money without a military. Yeah. And so the notion of a crypto company sponsoring a military is like, wait, what? Many people, I think, got disillusioned because, and I can resonate with this, like I'm here for the counterculture. I'm here for like the revolution that is antagonistic to nation state powers and nation state overreach. And I think the military is the symbol of like nation state overreach, the reason why it can't overreach in the first place. Did you ever read one of my favorite OG articles in the space is A Most Peaceful Revolution from Nick Carter? It's a 2019 piece. Do you remember that one?
I do. Yeah, yeah. What was the theme of that?
Basically, the TLDR is that like as nation state fiat just prints and, you know, people lose their savings in fiat, they're going to use Bitcoin as a savings vehicle. And that's going to force government to be more fiscally responsible because it's going to collapse down to the value of the services that governments can provide their citizens. It's going to be the value of their fiat. And so that they're going to not be able to support their armies if their army is an actual
sovereign individual type of thesis, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's just like completely antagonistic to just sponsor the army.
I mean, here's the other side of this, though. It's Coinbase's, I mean, members of the army on board to crypto. What are they going to use? Maybe there's some, you know, affiliation here. Maybe there's some, you know, eyeballs on this that wouldn't be otherwise. This is all part of crypto going mainstream in that story. And Victor Bunin says, he was very excited about it. He said, hell yeah, this is great. The men and women defending our nation and our way of life deserve our culture and respect. And this is just Coinbase, you know, giving respect to the military.
Well, Victor Bunin is the target market for this. As a Coinbase employee who is a huge Trump fan, like, of course, Victor Bunin is going to be like, I love this. This was great.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, maybe alienating some crypto OGs, but maybe picking up some eyeballs elsewhere. Yeah. David, Roman Storm is short on his legal defense. What's the update here?
So the Ethereum Foundation donated $1.25 million, a matching fund to Roman Storm. First, he needs more money because his court case is coming up very, very fast, July 14th in New York, and he is short $750,000. And so the crypto, we've raised a decent amount of money for Roman Storm. Remember, if Roman Storm wins his case, the precedent that open source software developers can't go to jail is set in. And we can just feel good about the fact that we protected one of our own. And so the big call to action is that the EF is matching your donations. So you donate $1, the EF donates another dollar. And then we need to get Roman Storm $750,000 more so we can win his case, make sure he doesn't go to jail for writing open source software.
Yeah, big encouragement. It was great to see the EF step up and go do this. And this is the second time they donated. So absolutely huge. Well, that's it. We got to wrap it up. David, I got a question for you in the midst of stablecoin summer. It's a question about, you know, crypto in general. I saw this tweet from Jason Choi. He said this, "The irony is not lost on me that crypto went from let's replace the banks to let's provide an alternative to fiat to let's strengthen U.S. dollar dominance." What's your take on this overall with our excitement over stablecoins, you know, going mainstream, all of these things? Is crypto starting to lose the plot as to why we're here? I mean, aren't we here to go bankless?
I don't know if it... So Jason, he brands this as crypto went from let's replace banks to let's provide an alternative fiat to let's strengthen the United States dollar dominance. It's not either or to me. It's yes and. And crypto has always been about replacing banks. It's always been about providing alternative to fiat. And now with the innovation of stablecoins, we're like, actually, we can do all of these things. It's a yes and. So we're going to strengthen the United States dollar dominance for those who want that. We're going to provide an alternative to fiat for those who want that. And for those who want it, they can replace banks. I think it's all of these things together.
I agree. I think stablecoins are a big step towards that, actually. I mean, the banks don't like it. We no longer need their savings accounts, right? We can keep the stablecoins in our non-custodial wallets. All we need is the yield. And hopefully that comes at some point. So we are making progress on this. Got to end with this, guys. Of course, you know, none of this has been financial advice. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in. but we're headed west. This is The Frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.